hooks the pass. Intercepted. Chad Greenway is there. And Greenway's got a convoy in front of him. Greenway down the sideline. Chad Greenway's going to take it all the way. Touchdown, Vikings.
My cardio fitness is probably not quite as good as it was then, but I give myself so much heck for that play because I looked like I was pulling a camper. That play, obviously over when you play 11 years or you're part of a team for 11 years, there's so many plays that stick out of your mind. That one is so fun.
Hey, Viking fans, welcome to episode 46 of the Minnesota Vikings podcast. We are officially in, let's call it the dog days of the offseason. The, hey, nothing's really going on part of the offseason, but we still have a great episode for you. We've got an interview with Viking linebacker Chad Greenway. We're going to talk a little offensive line, and we might even talk a little NFL league rule change possibilities. Joining me for the first time in a while in, let's call it the virtual studio. All three of us are here. To the virtual left of me, producer from thevikings.com, Chris Corso. Hey, buddy, how are you?
What's going on, Si? I haven't seen you in a little while here. It's good to see you on this virtual video chat here.
Thank you. I have a mustache now. I feel like I'm pulling it off. You're wearing a New York Knicks jersey. I don't feel like you're pulling that off. And everything's great. Yeah, man, what a wonderful time to be together on the internet. Below Chris Corso on the screen, the wonderful Jay Nelson. Guys, let's get right into it off the top. And the thing that we've been talking about off microphone, and therefore the thing we decided to talk about on microphone this week, is the offensive line. Constantly a topic of fan interest. And controversy might not be the right. Well, maybe it's just it is probably the most dramatic talking point for this fan base. And Garrett Bradbury spoke to the media on Wednesday afternoon. And if you get a chance, is that Chris? Is it on Vikings.com?
It is on Vikings.com.
I'm a big Bradbury fan as a player, but also just as a guy. He's really great to listen to. He's very bright. So it's a good watch, so head over there. But I was surprised, well, not surprised. The thing that stuck out to me was how much he focused on the idea of team chemistry and continuity from last year to this year, because this is a unit that hasn't had a ton of continuity in the last 4 or 5 years, and Kubiak is now calling the plays. It's still his system, same offensive line coach as last year. We're moving forward with a lot of continuity from a program standpoint.
Absolutely, and I think the continuity starts with Gary Kubiak, and this is a Vikings rushing offense that was pretty far down in the league before Kubiak got into the building, and I know he wasn't leading the way as the offensive coordinator, but he did establish that zone blocking scheme in the running game, and the Vikings obviously had one of the best rushing attacks in the league last year, and that's because of the athletic guys like Garrett Bradbury, Brian O'Neill. You bring in an Ezra Cleveland to possibly be the right tackle, but Riley Reiff being the lone veteran, you're looking at a lot of young players on this offensive line.
Ezra Cleveland to be the possible left tackle, right? Because Brian O'Neill isn't going anywhere. Brian O'Neill is unless we see now here's the thing. Here's the problem with the offensive line and the Minnesota Vikings and their fans and their personalities. It is impossible to not speculate. It is impossible to not, because when you said that, my brain went, well, why would Brian O'Neill, I mean, he's a stud. He was all world last year. And then I go, well, maybe we put him on the left and maybe Riley. There's just so many possibilities given the mass influx of young players and the flexibility of the guys that were there previously.
Obviously, you have Garrett Bradbury in the middle at center. You could, with the performance of Brian O'Neill last year, you could make him a left tackle. I would love him being the left tackle for the next 10 years for the Vikings. And then obviously Ezra Cleveland can play on the right. He can play on the left, according to Gary Kubiak. So, and then you have Riley Reiff, who was the left tackle for the Vikings last year, and they're saying that he can move on the inside and play guard, and take the position that Josh Klein leaves as he left in free agency. So, like you said, a lot of different things that you can do with this offensive line, and I trust Gary Kubiak to make the right decision.
Well, Bradbury said in that interview, he kind of likened it to hoping that they could do what the 49ers did. He said he hopes they can make a similar jump to what the Niners did last season, since the two teams are playing similar systems. And, you know, that is what happened with the Niners. They got back Garoppolo, but they had that year to really work together, and then the next year was a big jumping off point. The only thing I'll say, Chris, and again, we are in no position to decide or guess where we think all these guys will land. But when a guy is as good as Brian O'Neill is at what he does, I would love to see if he's good at something else. But part of me goes, hey, let's just get another guy as good as him on the other side and let him keep absolutely kicking ass. But I think the really interesting thing will be with Josh Klein no longer on the squad, that means there's for sure at least one open spot up for grabs. And I think the number, Jay, how many offensive linemen were either rookies or second year?
I believe it was seven.
Seven rookie or second year players coming into the offensive line. And you look at guys, let's talk about a couple of the guys who could maybe battle for that Josh Klein position. You start with Dakota Dozier. 7 years of experience, played in all 16 regular games last season, started in four of them. I'm a big Dakota Dozier guy or fan, and I would love to see him get a chance to compete for that spot. I'll tell you, whether he gets it or not, having a guy like Dakota Dozier, the MacGyver style, this is a dude who can fill in and do a lot of, like, that's the sort of guy that quietly makes a good offensive line great. Because the idea that these five guys are going to get through a season unscathed is pure silliness. And to have, and we've seen it in the past on this team, when you get to the second option and the third option, you go, oh no. So to have a guy like Dakota Dozier as a luxury is such a good, that's not saying I don't want him to get that starting spot, but I've always looked at him as a guy who's like a glue guy, who's really a luxury for the team to have if all of our spots are clicking.
Absolutely. And a player that really will see if he makes that jump in his second season is a fourth round draft pick at Oklahoma last year, Drew Samia, who had very high expectations coming out of last year's draft and didn't really earn a high amount of offensive reps or any sort of starting spot at the guard position. So look for him to battle it out with a guy like Pat Elflein, because a lot of Vikings fans have been hard on Pat Elflein, but the one thing is he's always out there, he's always starting, and he's always been able to put in quality reps at that position. And keep in mind, one thing I want to put out there is we always talk about the run blocking with these players. The Vikings allowed 12 less sacks on Kirk Cousins from the year prior. It was 40 sacks in the year prior, and it was about 28 last season. So the pass blocking is always ripped on for the Vikings, but I just want to put out a stat that just to show what Gary Kubiak and Rick Dennison have done with these guys. I think there's improvement there, but I think there's a lot of improvement that needs to happen this year if we want to be serious contenders.
Well, let me play devil's advocate on you for a second, because I've on this podcast constantly spoke about how big of a fan I am of Gary Kubiak, and I think that stat is a good stat. I think the other side of that stat is I'm less worried about and this is going to sound really dumb, I'm less worried about the amount of sacks that Kirk took last year and has taken since he's been here, and I'm more worried about the amount of time he has to throw. Because Kirk is a very ball protective quarterback, from a, hey, the alarm bells are going off in my head, I have to get, I mean, to the point that, like, in two seasons, You know, he had that back of the end zone interception against, I believe, the Packers, and he had one other bad. So when he makes a bad interception throw, it stands out so dramatically because he very rarely puts balls in that position. To me, it's about giving him the extra second. You know, to me, it's about where I'd love to see this offensive line step up and where I think they can step up this year. And the running game is a part of that, and the scheme is a part of that, and Kirk is a part of that. But it's just giving us that extra second, half second. Second and a half to really let him survey his options and really be comfortable when he throws the ball. Back to Drew Samia, because you interviewed Kubiak, Corso, and I can't remember if it was your interview or somewhere else, but somebody asked him about the guard position, and was Drew the first name he threw out there?
No, it was actually Aviante Collins, who's a...
That's what it was. It was yes. With all the people talking about Drew and all these other names, the first name, and I don't think that means anything, it just means that's a guy that obviously is in the forefront of his mind and the organization believes in to a certain degree.
Yeah, he's been around for multiple years now at a TCU, an undrafted free agent. The Vikings, I mean, it's like their thing to find guys out of nowhere, the Anthony Harris's, the Adam Thielen's, the Marcus Sherrill's of the world, and this is another guy, Aviante Collins, who's hung around. He had a tough injury at the beginning of his career, which really limited his playing time, but the Vikings have stuck with him. They've kept a roster spot for him, and he's a smart guy. He's a player that stepped in when he's needed to with injury, and he's definitely a guy who's stood around. He's still in the locker room after all these years. And I hear Gary Kubiak say his name when talking about the guard position, and obviously losing Josh Klein and the play of Pat Elflein leaves some openings there. So Aviante Collins, a name to remember. I'm glad you brought that up.
One thing that was interesting on my end, and I don't know if you want to, you can read between the lines if you really want to, but these two names that we just talked about between Collins and Dakota Dozier, those are actually both the guys that Bradbury said today on the conference call that he's been working out with here in Minnesota. So those three guys have been putting in the extra effort and the reps in the offseason together, and that can only help build chemistry with those guys. So if legitimately those two guys are in the running as and in one of the guard positions, you know, spending that time with Bradbury and doing what they're doing, I think that's going to be an advantage for both of them, getting that offseason workout time with Garrett.
You know, and I'm going to stump here for Pat Elflein. This is something that I've been destroyed on Twitter about, and I will continue to be fine with that happening. Pat Elflein is a guy who came into our league, played center his first year, and played pretty damn well. He had a pretty good first season, and I remember thinking during that season, like, man, we really got something here. And then he had to shift to guard, and then there's been a number of different coordinators and different schemes, and I don't buy into this national pro football focus narrative about Pat. I'm not telling you that next year he's going to have an excellent season. I'm not telling you he's going to be a perennial Pro Bowler. I'm just telling you my mind isn't made up on Pat Elflein yet. This is the year for Pat, in my opinion. This is the year now that with this continuity and with this line being there and with the same coaching staff that I think he needs to show up. But, you know, the other... I've been around Pat. I've been around those guys. He's also, like, he's got a certain glue to him. He's got a certain charisma to him that kind of carries that group as a dude. And, I am a big fan of his. And I think when we talk about his play last year, we don't consider the entire journey. And I think football fans do that too much. A guy has a bad season and all of a sudden he's terrible. A guy has a great season and all of a sudden he's a superstar. And I think you got to give yourself the opportunity to, you know, look at Jared Goff. Jared Goff is a great example where 3 years ago, you know, two off seasons ago before they go to the Super Bowl, he's trash. And then everybody's high on him and he gets the contract. Like, just the public perception on players based on their most recent performance is always really polarizing. So I'm really curious to see what Pat Elflein does this year. And I'm going to continue to be that guy that I do. I think he's going to have a great year. I think at the end of the year, those conversations we were having at the end of last year about Pat Elflein will look silly. Now, again, tweet at me and tell me I'm an idiot, but that's where I'm at currently.
I'm glad you brought up his personality, just because fans like to be brought into the locker room. And if you go into the locker room, you will not see the three amigos on the offensive line not together when it comes to Garrett Bradbury, Brian O'Neill, and Pat Elflein. The three of those guys are always together. They huddle around Kirk Cousins. They have a great relationship, those three guys. They all come from similar situations in college where they were the top offensive linemen in their system. So these guys have a great thing going on when it comes to the chemistry. I mean, I think Ezra Cleveland is a guy who's going to fit right in to that vibe and that mindset. Just listening to him after he was drafted by the Vikings and hearing the way he speaks and talks, and I think he's got the same kind of personality. And let's not forget, every year the Vikings make some crazy cut on the offensive line. I remember a few years ago when Alex Boone was cut, and he was supposed to be the left guard. He was set in that spot. And Tony Sperano and Pat Shurmur made the decision to cut him. He wasn't performing up to the way that the young players were in training camp. So I'll throw this to you, Si. I think that could happen this year. You never know. I have
thoughts about that. I'm going to let Jay jump in here on that point, but then I'm going to bring it back to a more of a larger league point on that, Chris.
Yeah, one of the things on my end, you know, you're just talking about the cohesiveness and some of these guys trying to fit in. I mean, you had three draft picks and you have another three undrafted free agents that you signed in here. And some of those guys are monsters. There's some 6-7 guys that we're bringing in. And guess what? In my mind, I think when you look at some of these different positions, if you're talking about possibly moving tackles into guards, or you're talking about adding in some of these other guys that were naturally guards in college, I think if you're saying that some of these younger guys are coming in and if they can perform, that's going to be a huge deal for this team, because yeah, there's the money saving and everything, but you're also replenishing the position with some younger talent. And I think one of the best parts of this for this team is that if they do have some diamonds in the rough with some of the guys they brought in, that is a huge boon for this team moving forward and for this position. Now, in my perfect world, what would I love to see? I'd love to see at least three of the five guys in the front end be 6-7 and just a bunch of road graders running down the field, either opening holes for Dalvin or just being able to give Kirk the time on the passing, like we were talking about. If you can give him that extra second, that's a monster thing for him, because if he's got time, he can nail people down the field. So for me, I think there's a lot of intrigue at this position, and it's going to be kind of interesting to see if the young guys step up or if the veterans have a little bit more of an advantage because they've been in the system before. So there's a lot of intriguing stuff here, and I'm really interested to see who steps up and makes it happen.
Well, and to get back to Chris's point, here's the thing. I'm not going to speculate on, you know, what the Vikings might do from a front office standpoint. But the thing I will say is we're in an odd situation with the virus, the shortened off season, the uncertainty moving forward. Obviously, the NFL plans to play the season as scheduled. They have a lot of contingency plans. We're not going to, you know, try to speculate on that. That would be silly. But I'm going to tell you that adds a lot of variable to how rosters are put together. And let's talk outside the Vikings. You get teams coming together and they go, well, hey, do we value veterans, because it's too difficult for these guys to learn this playbook and step in as offensive linemen early? Maybe we value rookies more, because this overpriced veteran contract, given the fact that we're not sure that we're going to have fans in seats for an entire season. I think every front office around the league will approach their roster differently. So you could find yourself in a situation as you get up to training camp and preseason and stuff like that, when you see some of these surprising cuts, that could be on a larger scale or a smaller scale. So I think we have no real certainty as to what the competition will look like in terms of who all the final competitors in that realm will be. But I definitely think it's going to be interesting. I do think, I'll say two things. One, I do think it's asking a great deal, and these guys, they get paid, they're professionals, but that'll be a heck of a task to be a draft pick and step into this isn't a three-win football team. This is a team that won a playoff game last year and is looking to grow from that spot. A lot of talent around him. And the good thing is that's trial by fire. Ezra Cleveland finds himself in a position where he's stepping into a starting role and he can really be successful early on. I mean, that's about as good as you could ask for. But, you know, I think we also have to acknowledge how, you know, how difficult that may be given the circumstances. The other side of it, I'll say, and this is what excites me, and I say this all the time, and I say this to you, I said this to you 100 times about Kirk Cousins, Chris, when I, you know, whenever a big game was coming up and you were all, you know, you getting all jacked up, and I would, you know, and the internet was getting critical, and I would say, you know, these are the moments I love because it gives Kirk a chance to prove, you know, that narrative incorrect. You get, once you get on the field and you get those and that's where I think the Vikings are at as an organization, and that's what really excites me. They've built this really good defense, which is obviously revamped, but you have a lot of stars still there and a guru of a head coach in terms of grooming defensive players, so I'm feeling confident defensively. You know, you got young talent at wide receiver to go with one of the best receivers in the league. You have the best running back in the league. Kirk Cousins is going to be here a couple more years, and he's shown to be very, very good, especially in this new system. So now you've put yourself in a position where you've stacked up on young guys, and you've put yourself in a put-up-or-shut-up situation. Everybody knows and has known for years that the Vikings' offensive line needs to grow. By the way, and that's not a rare thing. That's around the league. The amount of elite offensive lines in this league is minimal, but everybody has known that when and if the offensive line takes a step forward, this team is going to take a major step forward. Again, not unlike other positions, but it's been the one on the fans' mind. So I think if you're a Viking fan and you go, well, we got a hell of a season last year out of Brian O'Neill, Garrett Bradbury's coming into his second year, Riley Reiff had a good, like, you have some stable parts and then you have some real potential. You have this year and next year to really bring that thing together, and it could create that jump forward. If all of a sudden this thing comes together and we go from the sort of offensive line we've had the last few years, and you take that step forward to being one of the, you know, you find yourself in a top 5, 6, 7, 8 offensive line in the entire league, I mean, you really have the potential for a really devastating run, especially when you have such a good running back and such a good play action pass game. You know, so that's the thing. The uncertainty is still there, and I don't know how this thing's going to play out. But to the Viking fans who constantly worry about this, me included, I kind of look at it as this is that trial by fire opportunity. This is kind of the moment we've been waiting for. We got a little bit of a core. We got a lot of youth talent. Now let's pull it together. You got some continuity on the staff. Let's pull it together and let's have a hell of a year.
Yeah, and the Vikings have really addressed this position, not in free agency, but in the draft. I mean, look at the offensive line. You have 23 years old. It's at right tackle in Brian O'Neill. You have 23 years old at center and Garrett Bradbury. You have 21 years old in Ezra Cleveland. You have 26 years old in left guard Pat Elflein. Every year they've addressed this position in the draft, and we talked about Drew Samia as well. So these are young guys. Like, there's the only veteran on this offensive line is going to be Riley Reiff. So I'm into the stock that we've put into this position in the NFL draft, and I think we've done a good job, not great, at this position, and I think there's a lot of improvement there, and I think it's going to happen with time with these guys.
But you're exactly right, dude. It's the youth, and that's add that on everything that I just said. You add the youth aspect, you know, like, because if it does work in this next year or two, if it really comes together, it doesn't just work for a year or two. It works for a long time. You have a young, very good offensive line. So let's go. Chris, you've been killing it with these interviews each and every week that we've been able to play on the podcast. This week is no different. You had Chad Greenway, which it's crazy to think that he's been out of football since 2016. But you got him to spend some time talking about some of his favorite Viking memories and what's been keeping him busy these days, right, Chris?
Yeah, it was awesome to catch up with him for 10 or so minutes and just hear what he's been up to. I think that's how I leaded it off, was I can't believe that you have been out of this league for 3 seasons. So he talks about his favorite play of his career, so let's take a listen.
An all-time favorite, Chad Greenway, with our very own Chris Corso. Here we go, guys.
We again have a guest who needs no introduction, an 11-year Viking veteran. You retired back in 2017,
Does it feel like it's been 3 years now since you suited up for the Vikings?
Yeah, 2017. Time just flies. I mean, it really does. And I think when you have kids and they're busy, that's kind of it. Kind of aids it along, right? Before you know it, it's summer, and then as you're back to school, and then you just kind of keep going, and the football seasons keep rolling by. And to think I've already been out for three football seasons is incredible. So yeah, I mean, it's amazing. You know, it was a great run. I really enjoyed it. I love being able to live in the community that I played. Living here in the Twin Cities still is so fun because we get to, you know, get to stay somewhat connected to you guys and stay involved. And obviously huge fans, you get to games on occasion. So it's been a blessing. You know, I'm so lucky to be drafted here from being a South Dakota boy to go to Iowa. I mean, kind of all being self-contained, it's awesome. So yeah, it does go, you know, to answer your question though, it's flown by. I mean, it really has.
Getting ready for this interview, I just went back and watched your interception against Philip Rivers, where you ran about 90 plus yards to the end zone.
Chargers need a touchdown. Rivers hooks the pass. Intercepted. Chad Greenway is there. And Greenway's got a convoy in front of him. Greenway down the sideline. Chad Greenway's going to take it all the way. Touchdown, Vikings.
You think you'd still be able to make it the full way, all the way? Oh. You had a nice wall in front of you, so
I could take a timeout with that kind of a crew around me. I could have taken a timeout, you know, had a sip of water and still made it, no problem. But my cardio fitness is probably not quite as good as it was then. But I give myself so much heck for that play because you know I looked like I was pulling a camper when I was running up the sideline there. But what I remember, and it doesn't, you don't get to tell the story of why you look so tired, but it was like a, you know, 8-play drive, and then you get the pick and go 91. And man, that was just that play, you know, there's, you know, obviously over when you play 11 years or you're part of a team for 11 years, there's so many plays that stick out in your mind, but that one is so fun for me. And my wife, my birthday or anniversary 1 year, I can't remember, went to what's the company downtown, but they went and basically put it on to wood and laser cut it into wood. Woodchuck Design is the company. That moment I crossed the goal line with the ball up and all my teammates around me is one of the most special moments of my career. And it was so fun.
I was about to ask, is that the top moment of your career? You had a lot of big moments. I don't know if that's the top one or not.
I think the symbolism in that game was the deepest. So I think I'm going to take it with that as being my number one moment because there's so many things that go into it. And I'm not sure how long we have, but I could tell a story all day. But, you know, the thing about it was the year before my dad had passed away, the month later, my grandmother passed away. So within 30 days, we lose two just pillars in our lives. And my grandfather on that side of my dad's side had been to one live game in his life. And it was that game.
Wow.
So it's so crazy to think about just that, you know, you play 100 and whatever games, 70 games or something. And for him to be there for that one, to have that special moment happen, it just seemed like this, it's just incredible. And life works in mysterious and fun ways and just made you feel like your dad and your grandmother were there. And my grandfather was, you know, doesn't get emotional, but I was able to give him that ball to him. I walk in the locker room and be able to give him the ball that I caught. And you know, it wasn't about the ball. It wasn't about the moment. It's about just, you know, my grandma and my dad. And that was what it was about. And that's so special. And so for me personally, there's so much of a backstory to that play that makes it number one. And then I think you look at the caravan of players I had around me. And I think at that point in my career, the player I had become in the locker room and the leader that I had become was evident with just the people willing me to get to the zone. And that was so fun. The sideline reaction, I think everybody, to me, that was what really hit home was people cared about me. You know, people, fans, my teammates, coaches, everybody was really happy. And that was really cool.
Absolutely. And you know, you had the support of the fan base that last game at US Bank Stadium. I'll never forget you getting the big time ovation in the stands there as you had that last game. That had to be one of those moments as well.
Yeah, sort of surreal. You know, you're and I was never the guy that was sort of always in front of the cameras, right? I mean, that was a linebacker. I mean, you're not a quarterback. You're not one of these really high profile players. So for you to kind of have everything about you was cool. I mean, it was cool for a moment because people cared about you as a player, as a person. You know, with our foundation work through the Twin Cities, they knew that we'd done a lot to give back to the community and continue to do that. So I think it kind of just it felt really good for that to be able to go out that way and throw your hand in the air and give a thank you to the fans is certainly special. And, you know, I don't realize how lucky I am to be able to say that I retired my way when I wanted to with the team I wanted to retire with. And so, again, just couldn't be more lucky.
Yeah, speaking of the foundation work, you've been pretty busy here with the coronavirus and the things you've been doing. So tell Vikings fans what you've been up to and the relief that you've been providing there.
Yeah, we're doing a small part. I mean, there's so much to do, and there's so many great organizations out there doing stuff. But our foundation, we tried to pivot some money away from what we typically would do, which is childhood disease and families. And interacting with them, and we pulled some away, and we've done some fundraising to give back to Sheridan Story and Second Harvest Heartland, which are obviously two pillars of our community that are giving back and with meals to kids and providing meals and meal replacement for schools that are out. So trying to be a part of that. We did that early on, the first probably, 10 weeks in, probably the first 5 weeks of that, able to raise a nice number to be able to give back and create some meals. And then kind of the second part, we start to identify the need at the hospitality industry with bartenders, waitresses, and, you know, bar owners losing, you know, jobs and losing profit and losing all these things. And again, when we're hosting events, whether it be through our vodka brand or our foundation, we're always trying to raise money for the community because we want to be community based and kind of keep that in our focus. And so we work with North Stands, which is a hospital. It's a foundation through Tony Sine that gives back to the hospitality industry. It was a great idea. We're happy to just kind of partner with them and be a small part of it again. But I just feel like when you do something for good, you hopefully bring people along with you and make a bigger impact than maybe you initially thought you could.
Yeah, I think you and Ben Lieber have become the kings of the happy hour. That's all I ever see these days.
We are a lot of virtual happy hours. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun to watch Ben sort of take that stride with the brand he's toting. And for us to start, you know, a couple of years ago and be a part of this brand is fun because we're able to build it from the ground up and have it be a part of who we are now. And again, become the fabric of the community. So yeah, we're doing a lot of virtual. We're turning into nightcaps now. So less than happy hours. Now we're going nightcaps, brand, which has been a lot of fun to be a part of those.
Hey, an 11-year career, you've definitely earned it. Looking at the Vikings this year, how would you grade the Vikings offseason? I mean, getting 15 draft picks in a single draft, breaking a 7-round record, and obviously free agency was a little bit on the slow end this year for the Vikings considering the salary cap. But how would you grade the Vikings offseason? And a lot of young players are joining this roster.
I love it. I think it's perfect for what this team needed. It needed an infusion of young talent, which they got through the draft. And Rick's always done a really nice job of building through the draft. So you can trust his approach and his mindset with these players. And Coach Zimmer's got a keen eye for defensive backs. And I know they went and got a few of those. And you get Jefferson in the first round you never thought you'd get. So I think it worked out as good as possible. I mean, to have a nice mix of great veterans that are here, an infusion of young talent. You know, to me, like, you don't build a championship-level team through free agency. You build it through your draft and the guys that you're able to keep here. You know, the one piece that, and you can't bring it up, is you love to see Everson come back. I just love for him to be a part of this and move forward because I think it's so impactful for him. But again, you know, with Anthony Harris coming back in the fold and so many strong pillars back with this team and wearing the horns, it's going to be a fun year.
Is there one draft pick that you can just pick out and say, I like that guy, whether it's the linebacker out of Oregon or obviously the Vikings took a fellow Iowa Hawkeye? As a quarterback, yeah, tell us about him.
Yeah, Nate Stanley. When they drafted him, I was fired up. He's a guy. He's a Wisconsin kid. Had an awesome career at Iowa. And I think if you'd asked, you know, a year ago, he'd have been probably a higher, more touted pick. And not that he had a bad senior year, but, you know, our team was 9-3. His numbers weren't as strong. But you're looking at a kid that's going to come in and be, you know, he's 6'4", 6'5", just a huge sort of a Ben Roethlisberger mold as far as his mobility and be able to move around the pocket, strong arm. So, of course, I love the Hawkeye pick. I mean, it's just who I am and what I'm about. But I'll say the other pick, obviously, a Jefferson pick's great. I like a lot of them, but I love the Dantzler pick in the third round. I thought that was a great pick. I think he's got a lot of ability, so much range, so long with his arms and his height, which will be really nice to be able to cover. As long as he's not too handsy, as Zimmer will teach him. But I like a lot of what they've done, and it'll be fun to see how it progresses.
Last question. Eric Kendricks was finally given that all-pro status this past year. You played a big part in his career, especially when he was a young player in this league. What did that mean to you when you saw him get that recognition?
Oh, I love it. You know, I play a very small role. Eric didn't need much help. I mean, he's an unbelievable player, so savvy. Probably the most instinctive player I ever played with. I mean, really is. And I played with a lot of good ones over the course of the years. And Eric's just, he just knows. He knows where the ball is going to be. He knows how to get there. He can find a way. And, you know, and I love that he's just not your prototype. I mean, he's just not. He's not your prototypical middle linebacker. But he does it with personality. Again, he's authentic. People, you know, he's not trying to be somebody he's not. And he's just fun. He just has a lot of fun doing it. So that love of the game and that approach is so important, especially as he ages in his career, to keep him young and have that young mentality. And he'll be a leader in this organization for a long time. And couldn't be more Anthony as well. I couldn't be more proud of those two. I mean, I was a part of, I was the veteran when they came in, and you knew right away they were going to be unbelievably good players. And obviously with the staff they have, with Adam Zimmer coaching that group and kind of bringing them along, was so important, because he's a great coach and a great teacher of the scheme. And those guys have so much athletic ability. It's just, dare I say, easy, right? Cause they make it look easy. So, yeah. Can't wait to watch it this next year.
Well, your impact in that room is definitely still felt, that's for sure. So hopefully we'll see you at a game this upcoming season when we're all back in the facility at the Vikings facility. Thanks, Chad.
You bet. Thanks for having me. Can't wait to see you guys.
That was our very own Chris Corso, who is virtually sitting next to me, talking to the incredible Chad Greenway. Great job, Chris, as always. Thank you guys, everybody, for listening. Just a reminder, please, even though it is the dog days of the season, the off season, there's content constantly on Vikings.com, on our Instagram and our Twitter and our podcast feed. So subscribe all over the place. Thank you, Chad, for checking in with us, and we'll continue to be pumping things out. Guys, here's the thing that I want to leave with, because we talked all Vikings, but I have one league question. The rules committee is coming together here, and there's a lot of different stuff being discussed. Is there anything in particular you are looking for or hoping to see or curious about that comes out of these meetings?
Yes, I think the biggest thing is the onside kick rule change that has been proposed out there, and I'll just quickly explain it. If you do not want to onside kick in the game for the second time, you can instead take the ball deep in your zone at a 4th and 15 and go for it at that 4th and 15 with 15 yards to go, and obviously if you don't get that conversion, the game is most likely over. I think it adds another asset to the game. It's kind of interesting, and there's a lot obviously to debate and talk about, but definitely an interesting proposal. Not sure the traditionalist in me loves it, so I want to hear your thoughts.
Well, I know Jay has thoughts on it. I'm just going to tell you that I call it the Patrick Mahomes is going to beat you rule. And I'll also point out, just to be clear, that you would only get to do it two times a game.
Yeah, and with that, the two times a game that are available are not in overtime. So the thing is, you have to do this during the regular part of the game. And this really came out of the fact that teams were getting frustrated, and the team that brought this forward was Philadelphia. I think teams were getting frustrated the way that everything had changed with having to stand still for the kickoff, and because the recovery rate at this point was only 12.7%. So coaches are looking at it as an option just to say, listen, do we think we have a better than 12.7% chance of trying to make a 15-yard pass on a fourth down play? They're willing to take that chance. And I think the best way to look at it is this is essentially a last ditch, last chance, last hope, where because if you're in the fourth quarter and all of a sudden you opt to go with this and you don't get it, that other team is getting the ball essentially on the 25 or somewhere between the 25 and 40 with not much time left. They're going to kick a field goal. They're going to go up by another three, and that's going to be the ball game. So in order for this to pass, in order for the coaches and everybody to pass this, they need to be able to do 24 of 32 owners have to approve it at the upcoming meetings. And I think if they're willing to make a change in this rank and in this way, you know, I think this is something that at least they'll take a chance. They'll say yes, and then possibly run it for a year and reevaluate it again next season. That's the one nice thing when they make these rule changes. They can do it for a season. They can vote on it again the off season. If they like it, they keep it. And if they don't, they move on.
Yeah, I hate it. I hate it. I think it's terrible. I'm going to complain about it. I'm going to complain about it until it happens, and I'll complain about it after it happens. I also hate how difficult it is to recover an onside kick, but I just don't like this. It feels like backyard football, and I agree with trying to increase the probability of an onside kick recovery, But I got to believe there's enough smart people out there that we could try a couple of different options. I know safety is a big issue with the collision of the onside kick, but I would rather tinker with that and try to find some middle ground between the highly unlikely onside kick and the fourth and 15. I do not care for it at all. And so I am going to old man complain about it constantly. My only bummer was before the meetings, that it looks like both proposals for a sky judge, or as I call it, sky ref, both sky ref proposals have been negated, which I not that I was a huge proponent of that, but, you know, you guys hear me complain enough. I think there's a way using technology to increase the percentage of correctness, because the refs are human. I don't blame them at all for how this goes. I just think technology could assist them. And then, you know, maybe some of these fans that are pulling their hair out at important moments could take a breath.
Would you have been more in favor of it if they had actually suspended him from a harness and flew him across the field like they do for the Skycam?
Yeah, put some fairy wings on him and just like the whole crowd. Every time there's a controversial call, the whole crowd just starts chanting Sky Ref. And then he swoops in like Sting in the old WCW days. You guys are great. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you, fans, for listening. And we'll have another episode of the podcast as soon as we can, guys.